Hello and welcome to One Game at a Time, where this week we look at the big dance, the grand final, the reason for the buzz in the air around Melbourne. As we track the development of the game that we know and love, we're going to look back at grand finals and wonderful grand finals, and the thing that is really the reason to get excited about it, September. And if you want to contact us, you can reach us at One Game at a Time. That's on the Facebook, and our Twitter handle is at Origins of Footy. A very, very good afternoon to you, Mr. Miller.
Good evening, gents. Well, I don't know if I can get more excited at this point. I mean, this is going to be a fantastic weekend. In Victoria, we've got the Friday off. We've got two One Game at a Time podcasts coming out. It's a fantastic week. And obviously, the big dance on Saturday. Well, it's getting tense. Who's your money on, gents? We've got to talk about it. We can't just, you know.
I think Adelaide win. But, you know, I said that last year about Sydney. And the romance story was the one that came through. So I think the same thing for the Tigers. And that would be very exciting for all of inner city Melbourne, that rough underdog spirit of the Tigers.
Yeah.
Finn, who for you?
Oh, g'day, gentlemen. Unfortunately, I do think that Richmond will win. I don't want them to win. Is it controversial?
That's a brilliant introduction for yourself. I just loved it.
Certainly sounded angry.
Welcome to our grand final special.
That's right.
I'm Finn.
Well, look, I'm really looking forward to discussing some of the great grand finals, some of the specific incidents, the tactics, and everything to do with what makes our grand great on that one day in September.
Yeah, that's right. And we're going to get to all those things in a minute. Before we get to that meaty discussion, we're going to go to mailbag. It's mailbag. So who's been in contact this week?
Well, look, I've had D from Shep.
The cannery.
Cannery.
Shared on our Twitter handle. She retweeted at Sir Swamp Thing. He said that the 2017 grand final will be the first where no one on ground has played in a prior grand final, ignoring the first ever grand final. So he's alluding to the 1898, and that was a fantastic stat, and it got us thinking. Oh, come on, is that the only one? I see the only one. So we're trawling through trying to find.
And he
was very lucky to say on ground, because of course Damien Hardwick, who's coaching, has played for the Bombers 2000.
And Don Pike.
And Don Pike. And oh no, I think it was Liam off air has gone. No, 97 St Kilda. Adelaide.
Yeah, because it was my first experience of the Saints in a grand final, which is very exciting. And then I thought, hang on, Adelaide were a new club. So surely, out of those two, the, you know, what, 42 players, they all must be brand new. But of course, Darren Jarman went to meet his bloody brother over there, Andrew. I think he may well have won a Norm Smith that year. Is that the year he either won it in 97 or 98? In that grand final with his smooth, silky, bloody skills and... he's the reason that remains correct from Sir Swamp Thing, the statistician. He's well worth following on Twitter. Yes. Because he seems to be coming out with all sorts of fancy statistics all the time. So thank you to Sir Swamp Thing. Let's roll into our discussion of grand finals where, look, I've made a list of my favourite grand finals. And it's really the thing you remember, isn't it? Because home and away experiences, you remember if you were there or if something particularly interesting happened. But the grand final is the thing that, you know, it's the massive moment of the season. And it just seems that sexy things happen in some of those grand finals, and they're the things that you remember. 1979, for example, is one of the most famous grand finals because the ball gets kicked into the pocket at the MCG. Wayne Harms chases it down. It's surely out by about half a metre, but he swats it back into the waiting Ken Sheldon, who kicks it through the goals, and they break Collingwood hearts, and they lose again.
It's rolling towards the boundary line, and Harms almost makes ground. He sends it back to Sheldon, and it's a goal! Oh, what a goal!
That's always shown on Grand Final Remix, where they do the Grand Final replay. And by the way, Channel 7, if listening, bloody hell has the Grand Final replay gone? Right as Melburnians that on Friday night before the Grand Final, you're allowed to watch Grand Final after Grand Final until the North Melbourne breakfast. That's how it's meant to work. Now, Channel 7 have got three channels. 7, 7.2 and 7.8, and they can't find room amongst their other crap programming to show old Grand Finals.
When are you going
to
show, Sequest DSV? You got to show that.
Well, that's it. Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares takes up a fair amount of TV time.
I think going on Carlton breaking people's hearts in 1908, this is one of my favourites. They defeated Essendon, unfortunately for me, and Mr. Miller by 9 points at the G, but it was Carlton's unsportsmanlike tactics that are for interesting listening here. After taking a 3-goal lead into the main break, so the
half time,
the score was 5-4 to 2-4. Carlton's coach Jack Worrell ordered the Blues to shut up shop. That's it, we're done. The players were directed to play to the wings and to hug the southeast border for all it was worth.
Soccer's version of parking the bus.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kept kicking the ball out as much as you can, never taking it over that halfway point. They only kicked one behind for the rest of the game, and they hung on to win the match. 5-5-35 to Essendon's 3-8-26. So after taking, I don't know now, but if you're 5-4 to 2-4 up and shutting up shop, I don't think that's an option.
You've got a problem.
But they did that, and that tactic made them winners in 1908.
Well, currently, I just don't think it's possible to burn the clock in a grand final. I just don't think it's possible. Just with the fatigue levels of the players, the way the game's set up, the way that they're policing the out-of-bounds rule currently, and probably for the last two seasons, I just don't think... You just got to keep playing. They just keep playing.
That's right.
You just cannot burn the clock for any amount of time. Like, you've got to be 6 goals in front with 3 minutes to go to like feel like you could just mess around with it.
It's
pretty, and I think that is absolutely brilliant, because there's too many occasions in other sports, I think, where park the bus is one expression, but there's many other examples of people not playing something that the supporters want to see, and certainly not buying into this idea of a grand final. So I think AFL is absolutely, it does it so well. They just keep playing. And my experience in my limited time here has always been that. My first experience grand final moment, I was the Leo Barrow U star. That was my first first grand final experience.
Throws it onto the left. One last roll of the dice for Leo!
First year in Melbourne, I'd seen that whole season. And it's just amazing. Absolutely fantastic. And just, amazing moment from a guy who maybe didn't get that much credit that season.
Well, the most amazing thing about that is you can see it about to slot into, I think it's Dean Cox's hands.
Yeah.
And he just comes from outside of the camera, just seems completely unscripted and held it. And the wonderful commentary that you've just heard is exactly what, those two things go together. Because the commentary and the footage, it all becomes part of folklore. So if we roll to, again, back to Carlton and Collingwood in the 1970 Grand Final, where Collingwood are up by 44 points at halftime, it's during that game that Jezelenko takes that unbelievable mark on... The wing, I suppose, of the MCG.
Oh, Jezelenko, you're guilty!
And that happens within the same game where it breaks the all-time record for attendance. At that halftime break, Barassi tells his players, no matter what, play on at all costs, hand pass, move the ball forward. He brings a midget of a guy, Hopkins, onto the field at full forward. Who kicks 4 goals. it all changes and Carlton become victors and leave Collingwood without a premiership again.
Yeah.
Which is a common theme for a long time, certainly during the 70s.
Was that the start of the Collie Wobbles? Do we know exactly? I know that phrase was coined a lot later, but in your guys' humble opinion, is that when it started?
Oh, no, I think it starts well before that, because they lose the one-pointer to Collingwood, which is...
To St Kilda.
66, Barry Breen kicks the point right at the very end of the game.
Finally gets a tap down. Potter has it. He can't break clear. It's taken by Breen. That's a point. That's a point. St Kilda in front.
Which is St Kilda's one and only flag. They lose to Melbourne 2 years previous to that by one kick, by 4 points, in fact. And you can see even before that in 1960 they get thumped. But there's this sentiment that Collingwood just can't manage it on the last day in September. And I think the Collie Wobbles exist well before that. When's their first... the first one previous to that is right back at 1953, where they defeated Geelong. So that lasts right up to 1958. And that lasts right up till 1990.
Before this Collie Wobbles, in their dominant era in the late 20s, yes, in 1929... Collingwood defeated Carlton by 29 points at the G, but it was Collingwood's surprise tactics that actually got them over the line. According to Harry Collier, who we've talked about in the previous episode, the 1930 Brownlow medalist, the forward line decided to use Gordon commentary as a decoy, and they were instructed only to kick to Horry Edwards in the pocket. And this was not Jock McHale's instruction, so it was the forward line. He was not known for his tactics, Jock McHale. But according to James Coventry, whoever's move it was, it worked, as Edwards kicked 5 goals and Carlton were completely surprised by it and had no idea how to stop this.
And Collingwood made an amazing number of grand finals, didn't they, in that time? So 6 of 8 between 1915 and 1922, and 6 of 8 grand finals, and then they had a little break, 3 years, and then they made every grand final 1925 to 1930. I mean, you know, you're talking decade and a half of like absolute dominance, really. They've, you know, massive success rate in that time. So people talk about the Collie Wobbles, but if you look back a little bit further, they're pretty remarkable grand final record, really.
Yeah, well, then there's just funny little stats about grand finals as well. So there's the single winners. You know, until last year, it was Footscray's was 1954 only. St Kilda's by one point in 1966. Then there's drawn grand finals. Until very recently, it was that the game was replayed. So that started in 1948, when Melbourne drew with Essendon. Then 1977, the very famous Twiggy Dunmark and flat punt to draw against North Melbourne. North Melbourne promptly came out and thumped them the next week. And the same with Collingwood St Kilda in 2010, where the Saints had every chance to win that bloody game and just couldn't manage to
bounce
do it. And
then bounce of the ball.
Yeah.
Another great mark.
Stephen Mills.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Goddard mark.
Who does he play for now?
The Bombers,
that's right, yeah. Nice work, Finny.
Yeah. At the end of the game, you felt like knocking a pack of pretzels onto the floor in the rooms yourself, but...
Yeah.
and then Collingwood came out and thumped them, so those are the drawn grand finals.
Which we'll never see again, probably.
No.
Well, we may see a drawn one, but there'll be 5 minutes each end.
That's a very good point. We won't see the replay, I mean, absolutely right.
And there's, I suppose, other wonderful moments that become really personal and individualised. So the Peter Hudson 1971 grand final, where he claims to have been knocked out halfway through the game, he's on 150 goals and he can't manage to kick his 151st to be the leading goal kicker in a season ever. There's the famous footage of him lining up 12 yards out and can't manage to kick it over the bloke on the mark, you know, which is crazy.
He's no more than 8 yards out. He should kick it. Up he comes. He kicks. Oh!
I've actually got a good stat on that. 2 years beforehand, that was the introduction of the free kick to anyone who kicked the ball out of bounds on the full.
So 1969.
So scores jumped 18% that year.
Mm.
And so then they continued because...
So it was introduced at the end of 69. So by 70, you see a massive jump. So put that in perspective. The Richmond-Carlton 1969 Grand Final... Richmond 85, Carlton 60. The following year, 1970, is the Collingwood Grand Final. 111 plays 101. That's an enormous change.
So Hudson and Wade, Geelong's Wade, kicked a century by the end of round 17 in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's this, anything, because we've talked about this before, anything to do with a rule change in regards to the boundary line increases... something effect. Immediately is affected. And
if you go to the 1972 Grand Final, their cricket scores,
they're crazy.
You got 28-9, 177 Carlton to 22-18 Richmond, 150. That's crazy.
And you wouldn't have time to go to the bar in that game. there's no 4-20. Like, you are glued in, like, absolute chaos.
So their strategy, which Parkin says in 1971, so David Parkin suggests that their strategy that year, or lack of, was to kick the ball as far as they could, start a brawl, win the ball, kick the ball as far as they could again, start another brawl, and then kick to Hudson. That was their strategy. And it paid off. They won against St Kilda by 7 points, and Hudson equaled Bob Pratt's record. So it's certainly no... It's no coincidence that open play enabled them to have that really, it's an awful strategy, but it was open play. There was no more you can run to the boundary and be safe.
So comeback victories in grand finals are very exciting. 1984, the Bombers, having been thumped by Hawthorn 3 times that season, managed to come back from a 3-quarter-time deficit. Leon Baker going forward. And effectively, Sheedy tactically flips his backs into the forward line. Guys like Paul Weston kicking goals when they absolutely shouldn't be. And they managed to pinch a famous victory from the Hawks. Now, I think that may well have been Lee Matthews' last game as well. I've got, I don't know, a memory of him very... very sad send-off, perhaps in the electrifying 80s or some sort of VHS version like that that mum can dust off at home. Other comeback from behind victories, the fucking Cats in 2009 with that bloody toe poke from Scarlett, the little toe poke to Ablett, and then Chapman kicking a goal. Hawkins kicked a goal that hit the bloody post in that game. And the Saints just... Rewald couldn't kick a goal. I think he kicked 3 behinds and 2 out in the full. Interestingly, that's under Ross Lyon football. And the very same thing happens to Nathan Fyfe a few years later for Fremantle. He marks a whole lot of them inside 50 and he can't get a sniff of the goals. And so they're famous come-from-behind victories in grand finals. Any other of note for you guys?
To go along the can't get a sniff of a goal, and moving back to 1902, where Colin defeated Essendon by 32 points, it was Arthur Thorgood's performance that was of note because of it being such below par. Mm. And according to James Coventry, look, he kicked 31 goals that season, but he could only manage 1 to his tally, and this led to speculation that he'd been bribed.
Controversy.
He was only cleared after a messy internal investigation between him and Essendon, and this led to him not playing for another 3 years, because remember, just prior to that, he'd gone to WA.
Yes.
To chances like at the Goldfields.
The most famous one until... recently for me, grand finals were forever blowouts for a lot of my childhood. And then the 1989 grand final, where Hawthorn were dominating, but completely destroyed by injury. You know, Mark Yates had cleaned up Dermy first thing. There was a bunch of players that were just struggling even to go on the ground. And Geelong came right back. Ablett kicked 9 goals and they lost by 6 points, looking like they could easily draw, if not win, that game. That was always probably most people's favourite from that time period. But that is the start of what is a wonderful rivalry between the two clubs. It sort of still exists. You know, they seem to have that Easter Monday game where there's always exciting things that happen to extend on that rivalry. But if you go to the 2008 famous grand final, where Hodge develops a great love for rushing the ball, you wind up with a score of 18-7 to Hawthorn and 11-23 to Geelong. And that's the advent of the change of the law to, if you rush the ball and you're not under pressure, it's a free kick and a shot for goal to the other team.
Exactly. This was billed as Thompson's Tornado versus Clarko's Cluster. So that was by James Coventry. It referred to Geelong's constant motion against Hawthorn's cycling zone. So, but actually, Geelong broke through this cluster, recording 62 inside 50s, but was unable to convert. Again, the score ending up being 11-23 to 18-7. The large behind count was, of course, due to Hawthorn rushing 11 behinds to put extra pressure on Geelong's forwards to defend.
Mm.
But as well as this, Geelong's shots from goal from within the corridor were running at 56%. Now, throughout the entire season, they were running at 68%. So it's actually unsurprising of their lack of accuracy, because Hawthorn pushed them to the boundary. So yes, it's not just attributed to those 11 rush behinds.
On the comeback thing, to talk about it in a couple, we've already mentioned the 1970, I suppose, grand final. Carlton down by 44 points at halftime in that game. If you look at the AFL website and look at like blown leads in AFL VFL history over time, you know, Carlton were down in 1970 in that grand final by 44 points. The all-time comeback record is not significantly higher. Essendon trailed by 69 points in 2001 at the MCG against North Melbourne and won that game.
So
that 1970 game, which gets so much coverage, just, you know, for so many different reasons. Carlton down by 44 points. That's a huge amount of ground to make up.
It reminds me, my brother and I were at a preliminary final at the MCG Bombers Crows halftime. 7 goals down were the Bombers, and Finn asked Dad if we could go home. And my father responded to him by saying, "You didn't pay for the ticket, so we're going to stay." And of course, the most wonderful comeback in, you know, preliminary final history that I can remember, Michael Long goes absolutely bananas and they completely run over the top of the Crows. And that's the Baby Bombers 1993 grand final winning side in the end.
And you still bring that up every Christmas just to make sure Finney remembers, and on the podcast as well.
No, I was fine.
Let's put it in perspective a little bit here. It's not gets totally stuck into Finney.
But he's loved footy ever since he was a little kid. You know, he was 4 years old, and in 1992 when the Bombers lost to Carlton in the qualifying final, he cried himself to sleep. Dad had to sleep with him in the bottom bunk.
Oh,
it's Jesus. True. It's a beautiful moment.
It's all coming out now, isn't it?
I've just mentioned the 1993 grand final because that Michael Long goal, you know, 4 bounces and Stephen Silvani claiming that he touched the ball. You'll hear the commentary coming over.
There goes Michael Long. 50 metres out.
Is just, you know, established in folklore as like Michael Long wins that Norm Smith medal, and that's a truly wonderful time in our AFL history.
And how much would that be ruined in under today's rules if that was played at the G?
Oh, they'd go to
and
a bloody,
it would go to a review, yes. And they just wouldn't have that romance about it. But again, if I can push back, if that 5-year-old Finn was around in 1951, I might have had the same feeling. Because look, Essendon could have made it three in a row. However, star full forward John Coleman was sensationally reported and eventually suspended for 4 weeks for striking Carlton's back pocket slash ruckman Harry Casper in the second quarter of Essendon's last match in 1951, home and away season against Carlton in Princess Park. Despite specific instructions that the umpires were given in retaliation to, I guess, protection of the fours for interference from opposing backmen, Colin was met with ever-increasing level of provocation, abuse, headlocks, hair-tugging, thuggery from Casper. And Casper had been niggling Coleman from the very start of the match. This included making persistent and heavy contact with apparently a nasty boil on Coleman's neck. And that Casper had punched Coleman's twice.
It's very obvious, yeah. Boil, obviously.
Whilst playing at the other end of the ground, immediately before Coleman retaliated. And according to The Age at this time, during the match, bottles were thrown at Coleman. And as he came off the ground, he walked down to the change rooms, and a Carlton fan spat on him, and he'd had enough. So he threw the cyclone wire, punched this bloke in the face.
Wow.
And he was, you know, shouting with rage about the match officials. He took off his jumper and refused to go back on. So finally, you know, he was, you know, trying to. That's okay, mate. You know, get back on the ground. Essendon ended up winning that match by 44 points, but ended up losing the flag because he was rubbed out.
Yeah, Coleman.
And that was even with Dick Reynolds coming out of retirement for that game.
Is that right?
To play 20th man. So to this day, it's thought by Essendon fans that Harry Casper is the man who cost Essendon the flag.
Harry Casper and his boil.
I didn't say in the last episode that Dick Reynolds, who you just mentioned, is the youngest Brownlow medalist ever at 19 years old.
Is that right?
Unbelievable. 19 years old.
Oh, we missed that one out last week.
May not be the most exciting of grand finals, but the Carlton South Melbourne 1945 at the end of the war is known as the bloodbath in front of 66,000 at Princess Park, which is unbelievable if you've been there.
Yeah,
I don't know where the hell they sat, but or stood rather, on top of the roof. Imagine,
that's amazing.
Known as the bloodbath. Look, it's been anything but a bloodbath this season, coming together with these fine gentlemen and some of our guests and all of the people who have come to us on social media. It's been nothing but a treat from me. Ryan Miller, any parting words?
No, I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. It's been a pleasure to sit in this very small room with you both. You know, I'll remember it forever, for good or bad.
May as well play Titanic music now.
God's sake, don't do that. But no, look, it's been a lot of fun, and I'd like to thank you both for accepting me in as a foreigner who loves this game, but maybe doesn't have the detailed knowledge that you two have. So I've learned a lot. It's probably the biggest thing I'd like to say.
And to you, Finn?
Oh, look, it's been fantastic, gentlemen. Thank you very much. And look, I look forward to coming back next year.
Yeah. Mm. And we'll have a new grand finalist. Will it be Richmond? Will it be Adelaide? We don't know, because we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, because we like to take it one game at a time.